This is the Hockey News Podcast.
The Hockey News Podcast is back, everybody. It's Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy, Ken Campbell. We're finishing off our divisional previews for 2018-19, and now we're at the division that I find the least predictable. I have no idea. I'm gonna say it right now. I have no idea what I'm talking about. When it comes to the Pacific Division, the division won by the Vegas Golden Knights last year, it's so topsy-turvy. Edmonton was a power the year before. Now we've got the Sharks making crazy moves, the Flames. So I guess we're going to start.
And the Golden Knights.
And the Golden Knights. So we're going to start at the bottom with what we think is the bottom, but who knows? It's the upside down. Maybe this will be the top in a year. The Vancouver Canucks is who we have slotted at eighth right now. And would you guys say at this point we can still call the Vancouver Canucks a true rebuilder, even though there was, you know, there are some conflicting maneuvers made by Jim Benning? He seems to always pay money for veteran players. And you have Trevor Linden, who is very committed to the youth movement, kind of being nudged out the door.
Kind of, yeah.
To put it lightly. But I still think when you look at this roster built around Brock Besser and Elias Pettersson, if he makes the team, Quinn Hughes eventually, Ollie Ualivi, this is a rebuilding team. Fair?
Yeah. And you know what? I don't think, like, getting a guy like Jay Beagle, I mean, that's not sort of rejigging the rebuild here, you know? I mean, you need guys like Antoine Roussel and Jay Beagle. Because, first of all, they're not going to be huge difference makers in terms of the team's performance. Like, if you're riding Jay Beagle, you're not, you know, I mean, with all due respect to Jay Beagle, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a guy that's going to get them 10 points in the standings that they don't need. Right, you know what I mean? Right. But what he is going to do is he's going to take a young team and he's going to say, you know what? We're not good. We're rebuilding. We are what we are, and we're not going to win a lot of games here. But you know what? There's certain things around here that are not going to be acceptable. Mm. You know, we're not going to accept losing. We're not going to accept, subpar efforts. We're not going to accept people cutting corners. And that's why those guys are around. And so that by the time, you know, you do become a good team, then these young guys that you're talking about are developing the kinds of habits that they need to have in order to make that step. So I don't have a problem with that. You know, I mean, I think we're all in agreement. The best thing for the Vancouver Canucks would be to win the lottery and have the Hughes brothers together.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, like, that would be ridiculous for this franchise. I don't know that it's going to happen. To me, the Canucks epitomize plucky. You know what I mean? Yeah, they're really plucky, and plucky teams sometimes do better than you think.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
That's my read on them.
Yeah. It's funny because when they made those moves during the early days of free agency, at first I was like, why are you getting these sort of finishing guys like a Jay Beagle or, you know, an Antoine Roussel? I still think it's weird, but I totally get your point, Ken. And I think for players like Jake Virtanen or Nikolai Goldobin, who are working their way up and really trying to become NHL pros, guys like that definitely get that job done. And you're right, where you want to make sure the room is in good hands, and I think they've done that. In terms of the rebuild, I mean, they're in really good shape because, Bo Horvat, I think, has already established himself as a very good two-way center in the NHL. Definitely a top six guy.
He's not a number one, though. He's not a
maybe
number
not
one.
A number one,
but I mean,
probably a number two.
But they've got the guy that should be the number one,
Elias Pettersson,
by the end of the season.
Yeah, exactly.
You think?
Yeah, exactly. So Bo Horvat can take on the big responsibilities up front. Elias Pettersson can hopefully get some good matchups and really get his confidence. I mean, you see, he basically ended Ryan Strome's hockey life in the exhibition. You know, I mean, like, you send his widow some flowers after that.
Dangles all day.
That was like an Allen Iverson ankle breaker that Pettersson pulled off there. So, you know, the kid's on his way. He's got some skills. Brock Besser, obviously a huge component of this rebuild as well. He's the scorer. And they still got guys coming up, which I think is important. You look at the defense core, and as long as you have Chris Tanev and to a lesser extent Alexander Edler, you're not going to be horrible, but you do want a guy like Uiolevi to earn minutes and to make his way up. I think the key really for Vancouver this year is going to be deployment. How often do we see Thatcher Demko at the NHL level? How much time does Ole Uiolevi get, even if he's making mistakes in the beginning? How do you deploy Elias Pettersson? Those are the big questions for me. The results are almost inconsequential because, as Ken pointed out, the greatest thing would be to get Jack Hughes to play with brother Quinn Hughes next year. If they finish eighth, it's fine. Even if they finish sixth, they can still win the lottery. But I think, this is a table-setting year for Vancouver.
It's interesting, too, because every year there's that team that is supposed to be scorched earth that is way ahead of schedule. New Jersey and Colorado last year, the Leafs did it the year before. So I still sometimes wonder if Vancouver has potential to be that out-of-nowhere team. You know, if Pettersson is Calder Trophy caliber good, Besser's healthy, maybe he scores 40 goals, maybe Jonathan Dahlin makes the team and has that great chemistry.
Oh, he did.
Pettersson, he didn't make the team?
No.
Okay, breaking news from Ryan Kennedy, he didn't make the team, but I'm still saying
that. Yeah, not even out of training camp, right?
No, but they were talking about him like he was going to be special, so there we go.
Yeah, it's training camp.
But still, regardless, I wonder if Thatcher Demko is already the best goalie in the organization, including Jacob Markstrom and Anders Nielsen.
Oh, yeah.
If he gets his chance, you never know. I think it's unlikely, but we've seen it happen every year. The NHL's last year we had 7 out of 16 teams in the field were new playoff teams. So we always see it happen. One of these bottom dweller teams is going to shock us. It's going to be Vancouver. It's going to be Ottawa. It's going to be Buffalo. It could be anyone. Mm-hmm. Or
it's not going to be Ottawa.
I mean, let's face it. It's not really going to be Ottawa. Sorry, Ottawa. But it could be, finally, the number 7 team in our predicted rankings, which is the Arizona Coyotes. I feel like every year we think, okay, finally they've made the right moves. They're really starting to show something, and they don't. And last year they were almost historically awful in the first half. But they were pretty decent. They were a better than 500 team in the second half. Alex Galchenyuk is a little bit banged up already, which is too bad. But Clayton Keller is a great guy to build around. They're a young team. They have a lot of potential. Antti Raanta was almost Vezina caliber good last year, especially in the second half. So do you think we're finally going to see at least progress from Arizona? Or are they sort of a team now that we need them to prove it to us?
Well, both. Because they do. I mean, and... I think Arizona, for this year to be a success, they have to be playing meaningful games in March and early April.
Yes.
They got to be playing games that mean something. They got to be in a playoff race. And I don't see why they can't, other than the fact that they're just in a division that's real tough. You put this team in the Atlantic Division and they might actually make the playoffs in that division. But I think that this is a team that, they do have to show us it. They do have to show us that they want to become more than just, the rest of the NHL's farm team, right? And I think they've made some real strides in that respect. I think Michael Grabner's a great pickup. He's a terrific 5-on-5 player. Gets virtually no playoff or power play time. Mm-hmm. And, I think he's a guy that, could really make a contribution there. And you look at some of their guys, you expect Oliver Ekman-Larsson, now that he's been named captain, to be sort of the alpha male there. They've got a pretty decent defense. Antti Raanta, part of the reason why they were so terrible at the beginning of last year was he was hurt. And statistically, I think he had the best save percentage in the NHL last year.
He was right there. It might have been Carter Hutton.
Yeah, but of guys who played a certain number of games, I think he had the best save percentage.
And he was 945 after the All-Star break.
Yeah, so I see a lot of good things happening in Arizona, and I think they're trending in the right direction. And this year, I think, like I say, it's they've got to be playing meaningful games. They can't be out of it in January. Like, that would just be terrible, I think.
They were actually out of it in November.
They were out of it, Yeah, they were out of it right from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're going to see some good growth here. Rick Tocchet, with this being his second year behind the bench, I think what you see is a lot of the systems and the structure really cement in Arizona. A lot of first-year coaches go through that. And, of course, with Raanta being injured and them going on that terrible losing streak, that didn't help either. But I think the important thing is Tocchet still had the room. And they progressed as the season went on. I mean, when I look at their forwards right now, it's a little soft in terms of high-end talent other than Clayton Keller. Derek Stepan, he's a number two center in a perfect world. Galchenyuk, so far, I think his ceiling has been second line center in terms of what we've seen, even though he does have a 30 goal campaign under his belt. I would love to see Galchenyuk break out. Do they have the wingers to make that happen? I'm not really sure, again, other than Clayton Keller. I think Ekman Larson's going to be great. You know, the defense core, they've got some nice veteran pieces there. I'm not sure if some of them aren't too old at this point. I think that's going to be a big acid test. I think seventh is pretty fair, but if they can be a competitive seventh,
yeah,
I think that's kind of the best case scenario. And then you hope for some internal growth. And I'm not sure where the ceiling is with this franchise in terms of what they have in the pipeline right now. But I mean, they got to keep building, and they got to do it organically.
And speaking of the pipeline, let's just ask it straight up. Is Dylan Strome a thing? Will he ever be a thing? Or are all of the Stromes doomed because of their skating to never become NHL stars? Or NHL regulars, in the case of Dylan and Matthew, for all we know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think Dylan Strome is the real thing. And I think I think they handled him perfectly. Yeah. I would talk to people who would say, you know, look at the numbers Dylan Strome's putting up in the AHL. Why the hell aren't they calling this guy up? Because he's not ready. Mm. And they're not rushing him into the NHL. And I think that to give him the year that he had last year where he could kind of really, you know, get some confidence and really excel at that level, I think that's going to translate over to this year. He's got to become a better skater. He's got to do what John Tavares did, you know, to even a bigger extent, because he's, you know, that is the weakest part of his game. He doesn't have to become Pavel Bure, but he has to become something better than what he is.
And Mark Stone's another example of a guy who took a long time. He was a pretty old rookie by the time he finally broke in, and the skating was the knock, but he became a true success story.
Mark Recchi wasn't a great skater, you know, and he got it done. I mean, it can be done, but you've got to at least, you know, I mean, skating is the big equalizer, right? If you can't skate, you can't play. It doesn't matter how good you are. If you can't move your feet in this league, you can't play. It doesn't matter what your skill level is, but if you can at least kind of hang in there, you'll be okay.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because like Michael Grabner is the anti Dylan Strome. He's the guy that's got the great wheels, but he doesn't have the, you know, crazy cerebral hockey mind and passing skills
and can't finish.
He just melted them into one guy. Yeah, be a pretty good player. Number six, we have a team that we had making the Stanley Cup final a year ago, and now we've lost confidence in them, the Edmonton Oilers. And you look at the offseason additions, the biggest ones are, you know, backup goalie Mikko Koskinen, Tobias Reeder, who might be able to play in the top six, at least the top nine. You know, you drafted Evan Bouchard, which is great for the future, but have you really built the support system around Connor McDavid right now to inspire optimism, or do you think this team is doomed again this year?
Well, they've got too much money tied up in too few players, and that's why they weren't able to make any upgrades this summer, and they didn't upgrade anything. So now what it becomes is, okay, so all those underachievers last year, I mean, who played to his potential last year?
Connor McDavid.
Maybe Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Ty Ratty.
Yeah. You know, maybe.
Yeah, the news. Yeah.
And then after that, anybody? Anybody?
Bueller? Darnell Nurse.
Bueller? Yeah. Okay, so... Yeah. So what they're counting on is some sort of a bump from within. So to me, a guy that's huge in this whole equation is Jesse Puljujärvi.
Yep.
You know, he is huge. He has got to make the jump. He's got to start contributing, you know, because it almost looks like did Peter Shirelli just barf up his right wingers? Like my God, like what is, you know, look at that right side. Look at that right side.
Not, I mean,
they need Puljujärvi to really make some gains here. And they need Kaylor Yamamoto to at least show that, you know, he can contribute, you know, and so they do need some of these guys from within. I mean, Connor McDavid's going to be as good or better than he's been. Like, if by all accounts. He looks faster, stronger, better than he was last year, which is crazy to think. But they need others to raise their standard.
Yeah. And it's funny because we were just talking about patience with Dylan Strome. But if Edmonton had its druthers, Kyler Yamamoto would be given that extra time to get stronger.
Yeah, he'd be in the minors.
And with Puljujärvi, it's the same deal, where even though he was taken so high, you would like him to be that complete guy before he came up. But you're burning daylight here if you're the Oilers. You got McDavid on this long-term contract, and he's peak McDavid right now. I mean, he's going to be this good for years, sure, but, you know, I mean, Adam Larson, Oscar Klefbom, like, they need to be healthy, they need to be better. Cam Talbot, you need to decrease his workload a bit. And Koskinen, it seems like the early returns weren't so hot. Who would have thought that a KHL goaltender may not caught on so quickly? But, you know, I digress. Yeah, Ty Ratty is it's funny, if you watch Oilers Twitter, like, Ty Ratty seems to be this, like, blanket that they're all holding on to, that if only Ty Ratty can hang with Connor McDavid, everything will be all right. But there's just so many, like, there's so many questions here, and it's like, why didn't they get faster over the summer? Like, other than Tobias Reeder, who I don't think you want him playing with McDavid just in terms of his offensive upside. But, I mean, Matt, you're right. Like, he's a top nine guy, but he's not a top three guy.
Right.
Why didn't you get faster? Like, that should have just been the goal. It's like, no matter what we do, we need players that can hang with Connor McDavid. And maybe it's Ty Ratty, maybe it's Yamamoto, but, I mean, that's a lot of maybes for a team that should be contending after so many first overall picks over the years and so many years invested in building something that's not fleeting.
Well, it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm looking at our yearbook, which we put together this summer. They're on their depth chart, the first guy at right wing is Kaylor Yamamoto. Yep. And in our season preview, he's number five.
That's right. Because we don't know for sure that he's going to make the team.
Exactly.
And Ratty's
exactly.
going to give him the job. Yeah. Now, the depth chart, I mean, in terms of organizational value, you hope that Yamamoto is the guy in the long term. But like you said, you don't want to rush him. But I think that's been a problem in Edmonton time and again over the years, is young players being forced into responsibility that they're not ready to handle yet. But there's always this pressure because you have these first overall picks that you're repeatedly building around. But I think I'm with you guys. I don't see the improvements. And I do think McDavid, believe it or not, has one more rung to go. Because I crunched the numbers about this. And I even talked to him about this. Because he and Gretzky are the only guys to win two scoring titles by 21. But if you look at Gretzky, Lemieux, Ovechkin, Crosby, all these generational talents, all of their peak seasons were at age 22 and 23. McDavid's 21. So it's pretty scary to think about it, that McDavid might have another rung. At the same time, I don't think that's going to elevate the team into the playoffs. He can't do it all by himself. Yeah. So I'm with you guys. I think that they didn't do enough, and it's going to be another long year.
Are we looking at the wasting of Connor McDavid? You know, like
in the short term.
In the short term, but I mean, can you build it quickly enough to capitalize on those 22, 23, 24 years that are supposed to be the salad days?
Yeah. And the great irony is Taylor Hall, meanwhile, is shining his MVP award, having just made the playoffs, and McDavid is experiencing what Hall did for all those years of just kind of wasting away and not making the playoffs. Yeah. Number five, now I call this sort of the boring district. We have a few veteran teams that are always pretty good. Yep. They're still pretty good, but in my opinion, their window is now closing. We'll go with the Los Angeles Kings at number five. Yes, they added Ilya Kovalchuk, but I think we all agree what they needed was speed. What's been hurting this team is a lack of speed, and Kovalchuk's 35 years old. He might score 25 goals this year, 30 goals. He's still a very skilled player, but I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that a 240-pound, 35-year-old man is not going to be a burner this season.
Although he was moving.
He's
in
got
the pre-season.
Skill, and I'm not saying he's going to be slow, but I don't think that if Kovalchuk is your biggest move.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But if it's your biggest move, I don't think the Kings have addressed their problem.
Absolutely.
Look at how badly Vegas eviscerated them. I mean, I know the games were close, but it was a sweep. A sweep is a sweep.
Yeah.
So I'm just not convinced the Kings have done enough. I think they're kind of just sitting on their hands, other than the Kovalchuk move.
I would agree with you, because the Kings play in a division where Las Vegas wasn't content with making the Stanley Cup final. They didn't stand pat. They went out and got Stastny and Pacioretty.
Yeah.
You know, the Sharks, we know what they did.
Yeah.
You know, and even Calgary, you know, with the trade that they made for Noah Hanifin and then they picked up James Neal.
Neal.
I mean, they're in a division where teams are not standing still, and they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they seem to think, I don't think they think it, because, you know, they've got a lot tied up in a few guys, and I think, you know, they seem to still be running on the fumes of 2013 and 2015 here, and
2012 and 2014.
Yeah, 12 and 14. Right. I'm sorry. That's right. Chicago was 13 and 15.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, 12 and 14. You're right. I think they're still running on those fumes. And, I mean, the game's changed, obviously. And they just don't. You're right. I mean, they just don't have the guys who can keep up, I don't think. And you know, I mean, as long as you have Jonathan Quick in goal, I think you're in a good place that way, because he's one of the best goalies in the NHL. When he's healthy and when he's on a roll, but I just don't see enough sort of turnover there for them to really kind of, you know, I mean, is Anze Kopitar going to be better than he was last year?
92 points.
Yeah,
I mean, won the Selke game. We know he'll still be sublime.
Yeah.
Defensively.
I mean, Jeff Carter will be healthy, you presume, for the entire season. That'll help, but yeah, I don't see a team that has embraced change enough in order to kind of get themselves out of the rut they're in.
Well, and that's what's really interesting, is that when you talk to teams these days about how they want to play, they say, oh, we want to play fast. You know, we want to play at a high pace. And I'm sure the Kings say that, but when you look at the players they have, they still are a big team. I mean, Kovalchuk, the big addition, big frame guy, and speed is not what he's known for, but he's he can protect the puck, and obviously he can score. You know, Kopitar, big body, you know, great two-way player. And it's kind of funny, because you even look at one of their top prospects in Gabe Vilardi, and the knock on him in his draft year was his skating. But he's a big body, and he's great at protecting the puck. He kind of seems like he was destined to play for the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah.
Is it an unconscious strategy that, you know, what got them the success, they're just going to stick with, and they're zigging while everybody zags? I mean, it's something that maybe it can work, but at the same time, you could lose in the first round of the playoffs the next 4 years because when it gets into a 7-game series, especially early on, your lack of speed is just such a detriment that you can't keep up with Vegas or, you know, Calgary or San Jose. It's going to be fascinating to me what the Kings can do.
And the Kings, in the last 4 seasons, they've had 2 playoff misses, 2 first-round exits. And I'm reminded, actually, of a conversation I had with Drew Doughty last summer. 2 things he said that stood out to me. One of the things he said was, I love still being on a team that likes to hit people in the mouth. And he also said, everyone says we're slow, but hey, we can just play faster. So to me, like you said, that sounds like someone who's just stuck in the mentality of we're the champions and we can do no wrong a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm also skeptical that they're going to evolve. We'll see. But so far, they haven't been. It's 4 wasted years in a row now for the Kings. Number 4, we have a team in a similar spot for different reasons. But the Anaheim Ducks, they were disposed of easily in the first round last year. We know they've got that great young blue line. They've got a great young goaltender in John Gibson. But the problem with the Ducks right now, of course, is that forward group is getting long in the tooth. Ryan Kesler, major hip problems. Ryan Getzlaf still producing at a high level, but he's getting into his 30s. Corey Perry, not the player he was before. So you do have some good young forwards, you know, Ricard Raquel, and you have some exciting potential prospects in Sam Steele, Max Jones, etc. But they're not slam dunk superstar forward prospects. So the Ducks, to me, are a team that I would have liked to see them make some bigger moves in the offseason, because I do think that the window for this incarnation of the team, the Getzlaf Perry years, I think is starting to close.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the big problem with the Ducks, is that they can't move on to the next generation until the previous one is finished. And again, like, you're never going to be that bad when you have Ryan Getzlaf as your number one center. I mean, if he was 45, then fair enough. But, you know, they have all these veterans, and they've built very well, but the ceiling right now isn't there. I think that's sort of the issue, is other than that great defense core, the forwards, like you say, they're aging, and until you can get Sam Steele a lot of minutes, until Troy Terry can get a lot of minutes, I'm not sure you know what you have. I mean, Nick Ritchie is another player that you need to see what he can do long term.
Well, he's got to sign a contract
first. Yeah, right. Right now he's skating in Guelph. But you need to get those guys into the fold. And I feel like they're kind of stuck in the middle right now, where they could win a round, they could miss the playoffs. Nothing would really surprise me.
To me, they're the epitome of a good but not great team.
Yeah.
They're just a good team. They're just a good team that'll probably have a decent regular season. And then, you know, then you hope that they catch fire in the playoffs and win a couple of rounds. Or, you know, I could see that happening. But, I mean, there's a real demarcation point in this division, in my opinion, between numbers 1, 2, and 3 and then 4.
Yeah.
There's a big drop to 4, and Anaheim's in that 4 spot. I don't think they're anywhere in that realm of the top 3 teams in this division, in my opinion. To me, they're another team that has to get faster, and they may have with guys like Brian Gibbons and Carter Rowney, but those are bottom
not the kind of fast you need.
Yeah, those are forward flying guys. Those are guys who'll be really energy, good on the penalty energy, yeah, and all that sort of thing, but not in the spots where you need it. You know, and as good as their defense is, you know, Luke Shen and Andre Schuster are probably their, 6-7 defensemen, 5-6 defensemen?
Yeah.
So there's a depth issue there, I would think. John Gibson, I think, is real and is a goalie who's on the rise. But, yeah, I the Ducks just strike me as, they're good. They're good, but they're not.
They're a real hockey team that exists.
Yeah.
That's right. They're going to win some games.
And they're going to win some games and lose some games, and they're going to lose in the first round or second round.
Probably.
You know?
I think the one possible equalizer, or elevator, I should say, is Gibson. Finally hit the 60-game threshold for the first time after some injury concerns. And in the last week, I was crunching a lot of numbers on all the goalies because I was determining Vezina candidates for this year. And statistically, especially the under-the-hood numbers, you can make a strong case that Gibson was the best goalie in the entire league.
Hmm.
He rated really high in all the metrics, you know, even strength save percentage, low danger, high danger, medium danger. But what was really fascinating with Gibson is that he had one of the highest concentrations of medium to high danger chances on him. So he was getting peppered with high-quality scoring chances, and he still had fantastic overall numbers. So he earned what he got. Right?
Maybe that defense corps is not as good as we thought.
Exactly. That's what I thought when I read that. I was like, man, they're... Yeah. And whereas Connor Hellebuyck was the opposite. Hellebuyck ranked second in Vezina voting, but Hellebuyck had almost the highest percentage of low danger chances. So his defense was really helping him out.
Right.
So Gibson, to me, is almost a sleeping giant. If he can stay healthy and play 65 games this year, I think he could earn Anaheim another 5 victories.
Do you only play Ryan Miller 15 games, though? Really?
I mean, he's getting old.
Yeah, he is. He is. But he's Ryan Miller. I don't know.
And he was outstanding as a backup last year.
He was terrific. Yeah.
And that's almost a bit of a problem, too, because... Well, I guess it's not, because, I mean, with John Gibson hitting that 60-game barrier, that's a good thing. But then, much like Andre Vasilevsky in Tampa, if you get into that 65 to 70 range, does he all of a sudden burn it?
Right. Tuukka Rask. Finally, Boston started giving Tuukka Rask 10 fewer starts, and because the same thing was happening to him. Now we're into the top 3, and again, this is a coin flip, but who knows?
Yeah.
I think this is a good conservative spot for us to put Vegas. We still respect that they're a competitive team. Mm-hmm. We're not calling them to duplicate last year, but they did add Max Pacioretty and Paul Stastny, which probably an upgrade over James Neal and David Perron overall.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Everything did go right, and Marc-Andre Fleury's health is always a concern at his age with the concussions. But I think we're also giving a vote of confidence here to Gerard Gallant and his coaching style and the sort of furious forecheck strategy, which I assume they're going to keep doing. But what do you guys think?
I don't think they're going to change their approach to the game. If they do, they're crazy. And, you know, I mean, what I like about them is I probably before the Stastny and Pacioretty pickups, I would have been more apt to think that this team – is going to take a step back, but I could see them. I could see them being as good as they were last year with those additions. And you know, I mean, I mean, they're top two lines. There's not many teams that can throw the two lines at you that are that good. You know,
especially with even in our season preview, we don't have Pacioretty priced into their range.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, he's going to be playing with Stastny and Tuck likely, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the first line we all know. I mean, is William Karlsson going to shoot 24% again? Probably not. You know, is Jonathan Marchessault going to be as good as he was? Maybe. I mean, I don't see where he would regress. Like he's a player that I think was always good that we just didn't know about.
I think he's Martin Saint-Louis. Yeah, he's following a Martin Saint-Louis career trajectory. A guy that wasn't given
well, not quite, chances. Not quite. Not yet, but yeah.
But I'm saying, but yeah. Martin Saint-Louis in his first couple breakout years was like, you know, 70 points.
Right, right.
So I'm just saying so far,
yeah.
Marchessault is the guy that no one seems to sort of respect. He bounces around from franchise to franchise, finally given a chance, and all he does is produce. Mm-hmm. And I think Saint-Louis, at the same point of his career, he was also a late bloomer, right? So I don't know. I see similarity there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The big X factor for me right now is Nate Schmidt's suspension. Mm-hmm. I mean, 20 games is substantial. Now, granted, this defense was very much, you know, a collective. There wasn't one guy that really stood out, but Nate Schmidt was really good last year. Ironically, Shea Theodore, another player that has yet to sign a contract. I'm sure that will come soon, but it really is about recapturing that magic and, you know, having guys step up. What's Marc-Andre Fleury going to be like at this point? Yeah. I mean, he had an amazing season. Mm-hmm. But he's had amazing seasons before, and he's had so-so seasons before.
Yeah. Yep.
I think third is a good spot for them, and I think it's recognizing that they are in that top tier of the division and that they could certainly make a lot of noise in the playoffs again. I guess my only fear postseason for them is the Washington Capitals cracked the code pretty quickly in that series. They figured out that instead of Vegas running north-south constantly on teams, if they can get them circling around their own zone, they got a little lost.
Yeah.
And I think if, you know, teams aren't going to do that night to night because it's too hard, but in a seven-game series, you know, I think there is that potential where if that's what you're driving your success off, teams can figure it out. Now, I mean, with Pacioretty coming in and Stastny, I think that gives them a little more versatility up front in terms of how they can attack. But I feel this is a nice spot for them.
Mm-hmm. And at number two, it's a team that maybe, I mean, when we did this vote, they did not have Erik Karlsson yet. So we have the San Jose Sharks at number two, and the reason why we had them at number two at the time was they were a solidly built, competitive squad, probably the one safe team in the division that we could predict pretty accurately with that good veteran group and strong defense core, solid, good but not great goalie, Martin Jones. But now everything's blown up. You add Erik Karlsson to the mix. So the first question I should ask is, should we be now ranking San Jose as the number one team?
I think we should. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I would put them number one in this division. Because, like, when are they not going to have the puck? Like, when are they not going to have the puck? I mean, they've got two defensemen that are maybe the best in the world at driving the
best
play,
in the past.
Driving the play.
I would say the best in this millennium.
Yeah, moving the puck. And they've got forwards who know what to do with it. I mean, you know, Logan Couture, Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski. You know, Evander Kane. I mean, these guys are not guys who are going to, you know, make bad decisions with the puck, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, in the playoffs, I mean, Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson, and or Marc-Andre Vlasic are going to be on the ice for the whole game.
Yeah.
For the entire game.
Yeah.
For the entire game.
Yeah, just like the what Nashville can do with its top
four. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I do think that they deserve to move up a peg, and I'm excited as all get out to see what this team can do this year.
Yeah, and it's fun because with Marc-Edouard Vlasic, you have one of the best shutdown guys in the league, and then you have these offensive guys in Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson. It's just so many fun weapons, and you know, you can complain about their depth a little bit now, but it's kind of like, who cares? With so much usage going to those top guys, I mean, it only has to work for one season.
That's right. It's funny. And I've been talking to the team actually this week for our next issue of the magazine and talking about, are they really taking their big swing in the Stanley Cup window? But you know what? Joe Pavelski made a good point to me. He said, people said that about us. Remember 2 years ago when no one thought, people thought we were finished and we were facing the Kings in round one, the team we couldn't beat, and then we go all the way to the final. And now people misremember that as, oh, that was San Jose's peak. But no, at the time, I went back and looked at our Hockey News preview that year, and we were calling the Sharks finished. We called Joe Thornton a declining asset. They go all the way to the final. So I think they have the mentality that their window is not closed. They have a really good shot this year. And I think we might, believe it or not, see the best Erik Karlsson season yet, because he statistically last year, so even though he had his ankle rebuilt, had personal life hell to go through, had 62 points in 71 games.
Yeah.
But he had the most primary points per 60 minutes of any defenseman in the league, and statistically had the second worst quality of teammate, of pairing, of any defenseman in the league who played more than 1,000 minutes. Ryan Suter ranked number one in that category. But Erik Karlsson was number... So he had second worst pairings all year, number one most productive defenseman. Now he's going to be playing with maybe Vlasic or and on that power play. Maybe they're going to put him in Burns, double stack, whatever they do. He's never had teammates like this. No. So we could see the greatest Erik Karlsson ever.
We could. And depending on how he responds to the injury and... The thing is, you know, I mean, like, you can say there's only one puck, right? But when a guy goes to San Jose, there's such a culture there of doing things the right way. And guys, like, I mean, Erik Karlsson isn't going to go there and become a, you know, a Hollywood guy, right?
Right.
Like, he and Brent Burns, like, they're probably two of the most down-to-earth guys. And you know, a guy like Joe Thornton and guys like that, like they don't get caught up in that stuff there. It's all about the team. And I think when you have players of that stature and of that talent level who are able to buy into you know that kind of situation, you've got a really good it looks good. It looks really good for this team, I think.
And keep an eye on Thomas Hertl. He's really developing into a top tier two-way player.
Yeah.
And again, they might be a little older up front, but with Hertl and Evander Kane, like, they've got guys that still have legs, and it's just a nice combination.
And Martin Jones is just, like, the most effectively boring guy ever.
Just so
like, he just plays boring, he talks boring. Like, I've talked to him, he's not really flashy at all. Yeah. All he does is just, you know,
gets his 916 saves.
Yeah.
But it's so true about the buy-in of the players, and Evander Kane is a great case study in that. He signed his extension. Not even 3 weeks, he'd been a Shark for less than 2 months. He'd been eliminated from the playoffs less than 3 weeks, and he signed for 7 years. That's how quickly he bought in.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sharks players were telling me last week that, I mean, they love living there, of course. It's a great setup. And Pavelski's talking about, oh, the traffic's great. But all that's great, of course.
Yeah.
But the main reason they all buy in is they have an ownership in GM that is going to keep putting a good team with a chance, a puncher's chance every year. And Doug Wilson even told me that last week, that he believes he owes it to all these players that he gives long-term extensions to. If he's not giving them a chance to win the cup every year, he feels like he's lying to his players.
Right.
So
right.
He doesn't really believe in a rebuild, he said. And that's why the Sharks are always in this tier of, like, they're always going to be pretty good, a high-floor team. But with Karlsson on board, their ceiling is astronomically higher. The other team that we have jockeying with San Jose for number one is possibly the most improved team, at least before the Karlsson trade, the most improved team, the Calgary Flames, because they did so much in the offseason. They bring in Bill Peters. They've added Noah Hanifin, even though they lost Dougie Hamilton. You got James Neal, Elias Lindholm, who looks like he's going to get the first crack on the top line on the right side. Even Derek Ryan, who's quite an underrated depth center. So I don't know. Personally, I really like what this team's done. And they had a lot of bad injury luck last year. We've talked about that on the podcast before. So injury luck alone, their forecast looks better, and you add all these bodies.
Right.
So I believe in the Flames this year, even though I know we're projecting them out a little bit after a playoff miss. What about you guys?
Well, I think that there's definitely a lot of room to make gains here. I think it comes down to two things. I think it comes down to goaltending and depth players. You know, we know that Johnny Gaudreau is going to be great. We know Sean Monahan's going to be great. We know for a fact that James Neal is going to be a really good player for this team. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But they need their depth players to contribute more. Okay, so I think that's, and I think that's where they, I think that's where they faltered last year. You know, so the guys like, you know, like the Sam Bennett's, what are they going to do? You know, Mark Jankowski, what's he going to do? What, you know, what's Elias Lindholm going to do in this new universe, right? I think that that's where the room for improvement, you know, where that gap kind of lessens. If those guys can pick up their games and Mike Smith can be healthy, and because I don't think it's a matter of whether or not he can be good, because he is, I think it's whether or not he can be healthy. I think that, that those will be the biggest determining factors.
Yeah, and I think if you look at just the impact that Bill Peters can have on this team, that defense core, it's a little rejigged because Dougie Hamilton's gone, Noah Hanifin's in, but you know what impact can he have on TJ Brody, who you know struggled last year after having a breakout season? I think just getting everybody going in the same direction is going to be very important. And if Bill Peters can make the team more comfortable, then all of a sudden, all those great assets you have can be kind of unlocked. And, you know, I mean, we haven't even talked about Michael Backlund and Matthew Tkachuk and, you know, and Michael Frolik, and what a great possession line they have been for the Flames. And then, you know, as you say, you got Johnny Gaudreau, you got Monahan, you got James Neal. Yeah, when you look at the depth, I think Derek Ryan is going to be kind of key there in terms of giving you those nice bottom 6 minutes. But they've got the elements, so if they can put it all together, and as long as Mike Smith stays healthy, then I think you're cool. I think if Mike Smith gets hurt, then you probably don't have the guy who can step in and give you, you know, 40 games or you know whatever you need if Smith is on the shelf. That would be a big X factor, but I mean, the elements are there. Like, Brad Treliving has built this team to win. He's made the bold moves. Now it's just about execution.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think it comes down to Mike Smith just in that we want him to be healthy, but he's into his mid-30s now. He's 35, 36 years old. So now the odds of him getting hurt again are probably pretty high. Big guy, was so good before the injury, but was just as bad as he was good post-injury. So that is the X factor. But regardless, we like the Flames to be right there at the top with the Sharks. And that concludes our league-wide list of division previews. Hope you enjoyed them. And I guess the next time we talk, it's going to be time for the start of the regular season. We'll see you soon, or we'll hear you soon.